stranger to addiction. As I write, I'm battling my third day without a cigarette. I intend it to be the third day of the rest of my life without tobacco of any sort. I am fully aware, however, that this is the third time I have quit, and it might not be the last. But I digress. The addiction I want to talk about has nothing to do with the physical hold of a drug over the body or mind, but more like the addiction of love, the feel or the presence of any one person you've grown used to having near you, grown accustomed to being by your side, or instantaneously available to you at the touch of a button, or concentrated effort of will and thought combined. As a croupier in a casino, I saw many such specimens of addictive love. Gamblers are enamored with winning, just as lovers are enamored with tactile embraces. But gamblers, I discovered, love the losing just as much. They wallow in it, as jilted lovers wallow in self-pity, soaking up the pain and sucking the bitter juices out of every morsel of their being. It nourishes them on a daily basis, just as the winning buoys them up at regular intervals and gives them reason to keep coming back. I have no wise words on the topic that would seem wiser than any you could come up with. We all have our own story, our own pain, our own addictions. I do have a story about a man I met in the casino. Perhaps telling his story, and that of the vultures that surrounded him, you might find some kind of empathy for the addicts of the world. His name was Frank. Still is, I believe, if he isn't dead. My first encounter with Frank was my first time on the roulette table. I was new to the casino, but had been dealing a few months, so it was just a matter of learning the ropes at the present casino. As I took the dealer off, he said, "Watch Frank's chips. The others are having a go." I nodded, not knowing who Frank was, but not wanting to advertise my new status to the entire table. Gamblers can smell fear. It didn't take long, in any case, to figure out that Frank was the wiry, middle-aged man seated mid-layout with his eyes closed. He sat so still he could have been mistaken for a taxidermist's finest Homo sapien piece. So tanned and leathery was his skin. In front of him, there were three stacks of chips, two of ponies, and a third of hundreds. He was obviously drunk. I started the game off with the usual call for bets. I noticed the punters on either side of Frank each swipe a pony from his stacks. I frowned but said nothing. They asked for color and placed the chips on Voisin. Frank, meanwhile, had his hands full. He had reached into his pockets and pulled out fistfuls of 50 quid notes. These he placed on the layout in a crumpled heap. I picked them up, straightened them, counted them. In all, they came to £1,000. "Where do you want them, Frank?" I asked. Without opening his eyes, he jerked his two index fingers downward on the layout at various numbers. An 8, 14, 27, 1, 36. There was no system, no method. I admired him for this, if nothing else. The rest of the punters played on predictions. Frank, it seemed, didn't give a damn. I spun. Frank's 27 came in, yielding him 7,000. He stood up unsteadily and mumbled something. Frank, don't you want to wait for your payout? I asked. But he was already walking to the bar. The punters on the table were eyeing his chips, but I gave them a look not far off from a lion tamer, and that seemed to quieten them down to an ill-tempered muttering. One of them, a Turk named Otto, who didn't really work and seemed to have a warehouse supply of Hawaiian shirts for his own use, admonished me for my scruples. You think Frank cares? He don't care. He's got millions, you know. Is he that lucky then? I asked. Lucky? Ha! I'd say he's the unluckiest bastard on the planet. Look at him. The whole table turned to look towards the bar. Frank was standing, draining the last dregs of a pint with one hand. With the other, he held himself upright on the back of a bar stool. As he brought the empty glass down to rest on the bar top, he raised the other hand, signaling with a pointed finger for another pint. The coordination proved too complex a move, and he fell backwards, landing with a thud on his ass. The whole table laughed. Frank blinked, confused, then sat there for a minute, till Rory, the bartender, came out from behind the bar to lift him up and escort him back to the roulette table. The weeks went by, and I grew used to Frank and his lackeys. I'd smile to see them steal a pony or two from under his closed eyes. It started to seem okay. Either the casino would get them, or the lackeys would get them, or Frank would get them. Since Frank didn't seem to care, he would wander off home, leaving thousands of pounds worth of chips on the table. And I didn't care if the casino won or not, and I didn't get any of the tips or money anyway. I didn't see the harm in letting the lackeys get a little playing money thrown or stolen their way. One day, Otto told me Frank's story. It was a quiet day at the casino. The night crowd had not come in yet, so only the regular afternoon punters were there. Old Fred, the mathematician, was sitting on the edge of the wheel with his six stacks of green chips and his notebook filled with intricately calculated permutations and possibilities. One day, he would mutter from below his magnifying spectacles. He would crack the code and be a millionaire. One day. He only ever bet two or three chips at a time, worth only 25p, so no one held their breath in anticipation for the big win. Tom, the mechanic come Formula One race car driver, was betting his usual £1 a spin and complaining bitterly under his breath that his luck had run out that day in 1979 when his left rear tire had blown and spun him and race car upside down. Never got it back. Never got it back. That was a thing with gamblers. Not only did they repeat their bets, they repeated everything, from what they said to what they did, day in, day out. They'd come into the casino and mutter the same prayers, the same curses, the same praises as I came on, and the same insults as I left. Their lives were as circular as the turning of the wheel, and as contrary to the world outside as ivory bowls that spun in the opposite direction. Even Otto was the same, with one difference. He was an observer of people. He had hardly any money, and what money he did have, he scammed, stole, or wheedled out of people. It made him dangerous, if you had money to lose, but interesting if you were on the other side of the table, like I was, and bored silly of the little worlds the other punters had trapped themselves in. It was from Otto I learned much about the other punters' private lives and history. He was really no different. Each day he would be there from 2 p.m. till 10 p.m. And then he would disappear off to who knows where, only to reappear the next afternoon, jovial as ever and full of delicious, malicious gossip about his fellow man. "Ah, Mike. You know Mike? Your manager, Mike? I saw him coming out of John's whorehouse last night. Yes, yes, unmistakable. His wooden peg, you know? Unmistakable. With those crutches and wooden peg. Gad. I wonder how he does it with that thing. You think he uses it also? Poor horse. Gad. If only Karen knew. Mind you, that skeleton isn't much to look at. If I was married to her, I'd be in the brothels too, peg or no peg. And it looks like she hasn't been pegged in years. She's so sour, don't you think?" It was hard not to laugh. But Frank's story wasn't funny. Even Otto didn't think so. "Ah, Frank," he said, shaking his head. His heavy tufted moustache quivered slightly, as if his lip was trembling with emotion. I knew him better than that, though. It was the quiver of anticipation of the telling of a story. "Frank is a millionaire, you know." "Yes, yes, it's true. He has millions. You know this dream we all have, even you, I'm sure, of making a lot of money all at once. On one spin, maybe two, but definitely without work. Yes, he did it. He did it on the lottery. He was a house painter before. Married, no children. I believe his wife was barren and they didn't seem the child-rearing sort. He was a gambler then too, but like Tom, only a pound here, a pound there. When he had no painting jobs, he would be here. But he didn't drink in those days. He used to joke he got high on the fumes every once in a while and didn't need the hops. Can you imagine? Look at him now. He can barely remember his name, let alone tell a joke. Anyway, he put a quid or two on the national lottery. He based the numbers on the day he got his cat, would you believe? And it came in. Rollover jackpot of £7 million. Lucky bastard, you might think. He had two loves in his life, gambling and his wife. His wife realized she had only one love in her life, so she divorced him and took half the lotto money. The witch now lives in Portofino in Italy or something. Bought herself a private yacht and a couple of descendants of Adonis to wait on her hand and foot. Got herself a personal financial advisor to manage her 3.5 million and make it into more. Poor old Frank. He didn't know what to do after she left, so he came back here. Didn't need the painting business anymore. I guess the fumes needed to be replaced, so he started drinking. The drinking increased his bets, and pretty soon, I think it was a matter of months, he was a raging alcoholic. He's barely alive now. A walking money robot, running on purified diesel. I feel for the guy, but what can you do? He was handed a dream on a platter and he's pissed it away. Otto paused. It was time for me to pay out the bets, and he waited as I calculated what was owed the four punters, paid them. Then he continued as I waited for them to place their bets again. You know, it seems to me we all have two addictions. If we lose one, we replace it with another. For me, it's gambling and scamming. I love them both. For Frank, it was gambling and his wife. When she left, I believe the drinking took over, and it's ruined him. And the wife? What's her addiction? I asked. Her? Oh, money for sure now, but also I think it's vanity. She was beautiful. I saw her once when Frank brought her here, soon after he'd won the lottery. He wanted to show her off to the punters, and I think she came to be thrilled at being on the arm of a millionaire. But she must have seen he would never leave the casino. in my opinion, her ego, her vanity, if you will, couldn't take the competition of the wheel. Fortuna, Lady Luck, whatever you call her. She is not an easy mistress to dispense with, especially if you have the means to keep her close. Anyway, she divorced him soon after, and what I hear is that she spent some of her money on improving and maintaining her physical attributes. You know, maybe she was in love with Frank. Maybe it is still all for him. But he will never give this up. Otto waved his hand around the smoky, windowless casino room. It has his soul, and his heart might belong to his wife, but the soul is deeper and harder to break with than the heart. It was hard not to like Otto. His easy philosophizing passed the hours I had to spend in this timeless hole. He asked me one day, continuing the strain of the conversation, what I thought my two addictions were. At the time, I said cigarettes and love, as I write to ease the urges, to aid my kicking this addiction. I feel for a cigarette. I wonder what will replace it. If Otto is right, if I am to have two addictions ever, ever present, ever replaceable in my life, what will be my next?